Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. You're at the fire of Bundjalani and Jane. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Robbie.
Thanks for coming in. You've got some breaking news there.
Yeah, we do have some breaking news.
You're very in the moment, like right now.
Yeah. We had a successful meeting with the working group with Melbourne City Council a week and a half ago. And we felt like we'd actually gained some sort of ground in discussing some of the issues that Camp Sovereignty members have been demanding for the past 2 years. Melbourne City Council attended the meeting at Camp Sovereignty, and it was a nice occasion in that people from the camp were able to share their views. Melbourne City Council brought their planning, landscaping reps, and we discussed potential different ideas around access, disability access up to the site. So
I might just let you know, Jane, that we've got our dear friend, my cousin, Marcia on the line. Marcia?
Good morning, Jane and Uncle Robbie. How are you both?
Good morning, Marcia. Good. How are you going?
Jane's just reading out this this article that appeared in the
CBD news this morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yes. Chip in if you find anything we should.
I was just giving some context, Marcia, to talk about our experience as a working group working with Melbourne City Council over the last 2 years. So I guess we engaged with Melbourne City Council in January 2024 when Uncle Robbie activated the site and created the Sacred Fire. And we've been in, you know, drawn out long discussions with Melbourne City Council and sort of looking at the issues around heritage, accessibility, appropriate plants, support for the cultural and spiritual and sacred use of Camp Sovereignty and how it's actually signage. Evolved. Signage, yeah.
Because people wouldn't have a clue if that place was there. You know,
well, communication is one of the key issues that is outstanding. You know, and people walk past, even the planner from the council made the comment the other day that, you know, community members feel it's unfair that people are camping there, that there's a different set of rules for the Indigenous community that is currently activating the site. And I think even within Melbourne City Council, the FRV, police, you know, members of the community are really unclear as to what that activation of the site is about, what the protest is about. And so Marcia and I have worked...
That's why we need an interpretation set.
That's right. And I think it's also important to acknowledge that, you know, Uncle Robbie, you know, he's been advocating for, you know, Camp Sovereignty to really be put on the map as an educational piece for the broader community for the past 20 years, you know. So I know that we're escalating this now, and it's deadly that after 2 years the council's finally come out on site and beginning to listen, and, you know, obviously we're working closely with Wurundjeri as well. But Uncle Robbie's been fighting for this for the past 20 years, so it's been a very long time in the making.
And the last few months are really showing the social and, you know, community issues that are arising from this lack of understanding, including the neo-Nazi attack. So Absolutely. It's really important at the moment that, you know, all layers of authority are listening to what these demands are about and not being reactive to things that actually occur on site, to understand the deep issues, the history of the site, what those demands actually mean. And so an article has come out this morning in the free CBD news, an article written by John Fleetmark. Marcia, do you want to explain a little bit about the article?
Yeah, sure. So we met with John a couple of weeks ago because he did a previous article on Camp Sovereignty. He's obviously very interested in, you know, sharing a different lens on what's happening at Camp Sovereignty and, you know, hearing from people from the camp. So, yeah, we've popped together the article, and the idea of that was to, you know, shed some light to the broader community. You know, we've obviously got some intel information of, you know, local residents within the area that just still to this day have no idea what camp sovereignty is about, what's going on, and, you know, looking at it as a negative lens. So it was an opportunity for us to be able to share some truths and hopefully with the hope to break down some negative stereotypes that's going around about camp sovereignty at the moment, you know, and give some clarity on why we've got people up there. You know, they're guarding our sacred site and, you know, our community, that they won't be leaving until they can see some physical things happening and some serious actions taking place to make that site culturally safe and make it safe for everyone else, because, you know, it's still a high-risk area for neo-Nazi, you know, attacks or interest from neo-Nazi, the NSN groups, to be coming around and lurking around, which they certainly have been. And, you know, I'm coordinating the day of mourning, the Invasion Day Dawn service coming up in January. So myself as a community person, you know, this is very concerning for me that the lack of safety is still, you know, quite a high issue there at camp at the moment.
Absolutely. And, Marcy, you alerted the Melbourne City Council about these threats a long time ago.
Well, in February this year, we had a working group meeting. The three of us attended that meeting, and Marcia and I brought up the safety issue with Melbourne City Council members, including Aboriginal Director Jason Eads and Kirsty Pearce, Chief of Staff. And we have been deeply concerned about safety concerns at the camp with the elders that are occupying the space for some time. And so we documented that in our minutes. And then, Marcia, you sent a follow-up email, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, it wasn't until, you know, I was contacted by the newspaper to sort of share a different lens on what's really been going on behind the scenes, that when I looked at it in black and white ink of the time frame of my communication, and thank goodness, you know, that I always do like to follow up and make sure I put things in writing, but when I saw it there in black and white ink, it made me feel quite shocked that, you know, the timeline of everything that happened, and, you know, just the lack of, you know, not just City of Melbourne, like Victoria Police, you know, they should have been notified as well about our community concerns. When we were setting up camp last year, not camp, sorry, when we were setting up for the dawn service last year, and I was literally down, it's 38 degrees day, and I'm down on my hands and knees and spreading the sand all around the fire pit and everything in preparation for the morning. And we've got the neo-Nazi groups training in that military style that they were doing, that they were going around to the botanical gardens, and they were literally training side by side to myself and our little working group that we had preparing for the dawn service. And just for the threats to not sort of be taken seriously, and, you know, someone could have died. Thank goodness they haven't. But, you know, women and children and all that, everyone's at risk up there at camp, and people were hurt from the neo-Nazi attacks. And we just feel that enough is enough, and, you know, our community concerns need to be taken seriously. And, you know, there's got to be some more concrete security around events that we have there. And just, you know, as I expressed in my emails, you know, for our elders and community people, that they're the ones there doing the hard work at the moment and camping to hold that sacred ground and keep it safe until they see the council physically putting, you know, things into action to make that safe space and ensure that it's continued to be protected.
But Melbourne City Council didn't actually reply to your concern email, did they?
No, not at all. Not at all.
When was the first time you actually heard back from them?
So it would have been, after...
It was after the attacks, though, wasn't it?
Sorry?
It was after the attacks.
It was after the attack, correct. Correct. After the attack, I think it was about 5 weeks after the attack, we heard from City of Melbourne. So, yeah, it's just been really, you know, there's a lot of things going on at camp, sovereignty, but, you know, it's just there's a lot of different complex issues. But really, at the end of the day, they're not that complex. We just need to get people on board, coming to camp more often, and start to, you know, it's ridiculous that that site is just left for our elders and our community people to continue to defend. It really feels like they are just waiting for us to just go away.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it? I mean, just to reiterate that, you know, the site is one of four Aboriginal heritage sites in Victoria, and the lack of support, you know, for the site, the lack of facilities, you know, infrastructure to actually allow community to use the space in an appropriate way is quite extraordinary. So, you know, as we've mentioned before, there's no disability access to the site. There's no date on the bronze plaque that is actually on the granite rock that sits above the remains representing the 38 tribes of Victoria. There's no water at the top. There's no shade. There's no shelter. There's no signage at the TAN level. And, you know, the calls for some sort of structure around the permanent ceremonial fire for the past 2 years still haven't been addressed.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm a regular TAN runner. I run around the Botanical Gardens quite a lot, and it just breaks your heart when you just look at every other memorial that they have and monument that they have, recognising every other group that has fought in the war or what have you, and you go past Camp Sovereignty and no one even knows what Camp Sovereignty is about. You know, we've got a rock with a plaque on it. You can't even read the context on the plaque anymore. The rock is not accessible. It's you know, not just an accident waiting to happen for another neo-Nazi attack, but it's an accident waiting to happen for someone that does have accessibility requirements. The way that rock is placed with no accessibility to be able to go up and get it, someone could easily fall down that hill, break their ankle or anything, you know?
Well, I guess we've looked at, you know, the Australian standard required is a 1 in 20 ramp to get to, you know, the top of that. And the design we've done, you know, with the appropriate ramps and landing strips, you know, it's a 7 meter height. It requires 250 meters of ramp to get to the top. So it's a sizable project. If you sort of lay out 250 meters of ramp, it requires, you know, significant retaining walls, landscaping. It's a huge project. And, you know, it's great that Wurundjeri are engaging with Melbourne City Council as well, but to integrate a 250 metre ramp successfully into, you know, the edge of that TAN track, it's a huge project. It could be $1 million plus project. And, you know, it's an amazing opportunity to integrate Indigenous planting, signage, you know, a whole lot of sort of sound layers, like sculpture. It could be an incredible space that surrounds the actual, you know, fire, ceremonial fire pit at the top. So we would hope that...
It's only been 40 years. When was it? 1985. That's 41 years from...
You when know. Those remains were rematriated there.
I was actually there that day when they lowered those remains into the ground there.
And look, maybe there's been a shift. I mean, my understanding was that they were put on that site as a way of sort of being slightly out of sight, you know, like a sacred space that you could go up to. You know, I think maybe there's just been a shift in the community in terms of accessibility, you know, changes to disability, how you experience these memorial spaces. But, you know, like you, Marcia, when I run around the town, I see every other memorial in that nationally listed heritage parklands and memorial precinct that has huge amounts of money spent on it, like the upgrades at the Shrine of Remembrance, the buses that attend there, you know, every other cultural nationality, every other war memorial, they have huge amounts of money poured into the infrastructure, signage, you know.
And it's all kept, it's not just that as well, it's all kept on the Botanical Gardens list of care management as well to ensure that that site is kept clean, looked after. You know, you're forever seeing fresh flower arrangements laid, you know, just that community care that those other monuments have, and then we are left literally with our beautiful elders and community people that are still there right now as we speak, camping on site to defend that area for us.
But it's also about perception. I mean, what frustrates me is that there's, you know, it looks like the group is just breaking a whole lot of bylaws, you know, council bylaws, that it's a security risk, that there's cars there, that there's young people there, that there's elderly people there, that there's tents there. You know, the history of the site, I mean, Melbourne City Council's GML heritage assessment that they commissioned themselves came to the same conclusion that there wasn't any Indigenous memorials in that precinct, and that actual Indigenous communities have a history of camping on those reserves. So these bylaws are quite new, and really it's an interesting challenge to Indigenous, you know, the history of reserve camping or whatever you want to call it.
To me, it's more than that too. It's what happened to the original people of this state called Victoria? Who knows anything about it? You know, this site sort of symbolises what's happened to the Aboriginal people. Remember, they came out of places like Melbourne University, which was a genetics... What was that? What's that program? Some horrible stuff.
Sorry, you were talking about the remains?
Yes. And you know, they're a result of a long fight to get those people out of those places and in a dignified place. But no one knows the real history of this country. And we all know about Anzacs and all these other wars, but what about the war here? That's what it symbolises to me. And that's why we really do need an interpretation centre in respect to all of this.
Yeah. The rest of the country is only going to benefit from, you know, really amplifying and ensuring camp sovereignty has the respect and dignity that it deserves. And, you know, looking at shifting the language to, that's our place of worship. You know, that's where we go. So this, you know, would not be disrespected in the way that it would be if it was a church or anything like that. And I think
Well, it comes down to categorisation. I mean, it isn't a place of worship. It isn't... strictly a memorial, so it's not protected under the same laws and protections that perhaps a synagogue or a Catholic church or a Church of England church may have when something like a hate attack occurs on the site. And this is just an incredible opportunity for recontextualization, signage, especially when, you know, organizations like VCAR are sending year 9 and year 10 students across Victoria to go to the site to write about it when they do their, you know, Indigenous walk around the city of Melbourne. There's nothing there for students to actually understand what this site represents.
Exactly.
So, you know, I would call on the education, you know, VCAR to actually participate in how do you create signage? How do you create, you know, whether it's a QR code to direct young people, community members, people walking past on the tent to actually understand what is going on. There's a coordination issue here. And because of these layers of bureaucracy, you know, whether it's heritage, planning laws, cultural heritage laws, there's all this sort of ambiguity that's layering over the top as an excuse as to why nothing can happen. And as a result, the community just looks at these campers and thinks, what the hell are they doing up there? And what's this fire? And so it perpetuates this, you know, incorrect idea around what this site actually represents.
Yes, I agree. And the other thing, other side of that is January 26th next year is going to be an interesting occasion because these right-wing lunatics are lining up. And I think the state government's got a bit of a responsibility here. They're allowed all this thing to manifest over the years.
Yeah.
Step up, you know, you're talking treaty, but at the same time you're promoting rubbish. So the same goes for the Melbourne City Council as well, you know. Anyway, things are changing.
Well, get your copy, your free copy of the CBD newspaper today. Otherwise, Robbie will put it up on his Crime Scene Australia website, linked to the article. But I think it's really important that communication, keeping receipts on all of these things, that, you know, it's really important to create these demands and engage with community leaders with these layers of bureaucracy, because nothing's going to shift unless this protest actually engages in a meaningful way.
Yes. And on that note, I'd just like to say thanks, Marcia and Jane, for doing exactly that. keeping us in the picture here and documenting everything that was going on. So,
yeah.
No, I think we got a whole series of meetings with Melbourne City Council. So, logical shift them at the end of the day. Will everybody?
Yeah. And then I guess, I know you're at time for, but I just want to quickly finish on a bit of a positive note as well, because, you know, first I want to thank you, Uncle Robbie, for, you know, your cultural guidance throughout, you know, working on this together. It's certainly it's going to be educational for everyone, and, you know, the fire that you continue to keep burning, it's, you know, it is with that end game to educate the whole of the nation, and I really appreciate and value and respect your cultural guidance throughout advocating for camp sovereignty and really what it's about. And hopefully, you know, we did have the council come out and meet with us, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks ago now, on site. So, you know, hopefully they're really ready.
Hopefully we're moving forward.
Change, and we are moving forward. And I'm grateful to be working with, you know, Wurundjeri, the traditional owners, on this as well. We've got some deadly people back on board now. So this is why, you know, we're ramping up the media interest in this too, because... we can't bow to the sword just yet because the job is not done. So thank you, everyone. Appreciate all your time.
And, Marcy, do you want to add anything about Invasion Day and how people in the community can support you in your chairing?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Maybe if they just, you know, contact 3CR, because obviously people are listening in now. That's the contact information you've got. But we are looking for, you know, people that want to come on board and help, you know, whether it's financially support the day of morning dawn service that we have. So we are looking for some sponsors or volunteers as well. Just anyone that wants to get involved with helping support and make that day a success. It's, you know, it's a day that we are in mourning, and, you know, myself and my team as Aboriginal people hosting that mourning and putting that mourning on culturally, it's very taxing and very emotionally wearing on us. But this is our responsibility and we're committed to doing this. But if there's people listening now, please just reach out to 3CR and get in touch with them, and I'll make sure that I'll leave my details that you can get in touch with me. And, yeah, I'd love to have you come on board and help support the day, to help just share the load. It is a community event open for everyone. An early morning start, a 5 a.m. start, but I'm sure I'll be back online anyway on the radio to sort of talk more about that down the future. Yeah.
Absolutely, And that's it is such an important way to begin that day, actually. It's perfect, and... it's been fantastic over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I've attended, and more of that. Thank you very much for that as well.
Thank you both. Have a deadly day, you mob.
Okay. Thanks, Marcia.
Thank
bye.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. So that's Marcia Glea. She was the chairperson of NAIDOC last year, and thankful to them too for acknowledging camp sovereignty. Also thankful for the York Troops Commission for... acknowledging camp sovereignty in the way that they did. They attended. Thanks, Travis. Love it. And Arnie Eleanor. I really started to appreciate the work of Yorick. I'm going to say thanks, Jane, for coming in. But we'll let's follow this up. You always got a space on my shows. I do Mondays and Wednesdays are the best time to talk about this. So you're welcome to come on any time. Monday I've got a couple of hours, so that's, keep that in mind.
I think it's always evolving, so, you know, we need to have a constant conversation.
Yes.
The site has, you know, significance for lots of different people. It's a learning space. I've had the privilege of learning, you know, cultural sensitivities from both Marcia and Uncle Robbie, and, you know, I would love to add to Marcia's support and love of your cultural guidance. It's been incredible learning from you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank
Robbie.
You. Anytime.
I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bunjil's Fire radio show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bunjil's Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.